Welcome to the Piercefield Oliver podcast. I'm Louise Oliver, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Matt Rowe. And we're delighted to be joined once again by Lota Mentel, the Chief Investment Officer of Tatton Investment Management.
Hello there.
Hello. So today we're going to be discussing what happened last year, a recap on 2023, and also the outlook for the coming year. So, Lota, let's kick off with the challenges that we faced in 2023. How would you summarize those?
In the end, 2023 was a very nice positive surprise, because if you remember, a year ago, we entered the year with a cost of living crisis, energy prices going through the roof, inflation taking money out of our pockets, and there was a very broad consensus around the world. The global economy was going to go into recession. It was all going to be really, really bad. Not a very great outlook. And then as early as March, some US banks wobbled, and everybody felt reminded of the global financial crisis 15 years ago. So it was all pretty awful. Doom and gloom. But then we ended the year. Well, it wasn't brilliant for the global economy. It went more sideways than upwards, to be fair, except for the US that had they had a bit of positive growth. But in particularly in Europe and the UK, we didn't really have any growth. We didn't have a recession either. But markets, and therefore investors, actually had quite a decent year with higher single-digit returns that nobody had expected really at the beginning of the year. And really, if you wanted to summarize last year, why did all that happen? Well, it did happen because it turned out that the global economy, with all its sub-regions, is far more resilient to high rates than anybody had thought. So after that very, very fast raising of rates by the central banks in order to combat inflation, get that genie back in the bottle, you know, everybody thought, oh my God, we've had 15 years of almost no interest, almost no cost of capital. Surely that will cause a complete collapse of everything that's going on. No, it didn't. Mm-hmm. The economy carried on, and that was what supported the year up until the end of the year. There was still that big threat of central banks just continuing to raise rates, which eventually was going to put the economy under pressure, because weaker companies might default on their debt if they had to refi. I mean, every mortgagee knows eventually it's going to loom and you have to go for, you know, have to accept the higher rates. And there was that concern. But then inflation actually came down just as much as had been forecast. Still a lot were surprised, and that allowed the central banks to do that long-awaited pivot and announce that they were done with raising rates, and that led to a massive sentiment shift in markets, which pressed down yields again. So what drove down equities in the first place, then the last 2 months of the year really drove them up and allowed us to end the year with actually pretty decent returns for clients in diversified portfolios.
So do you think the central banks did a good job?
Well, I think they are pretty proud at the moment. And in my presentations that I'm going around at the moment, I'm showing a cartoon even of them as sort of the superheroes of the moment, because nobody
thought a superhero outfit. Can't imagine it.
Because, you know, they. Well, actually, he wasn't on that cartoon, because the cartoon was from the US, so it was just
that figures.
Jay Powell, Christine Lagarde, and Ueda from Japan. But, nobody thought it would be possible to actually get the inflation genie back in the bottle through raising rates and not causing a recession, but that very elusive soft landing. And at the moment, it looks like we didn't just get a soft landing. No, we get a touch and go, i.e. the plane isn't even going to the gate. We're taking straight off again into the next cycle, or at least that's the market's wishful thinking at the moment, which has got quite some credence in terms of what we're seeing at the moment, in terms of the positive sentiment shift, and also, you know, that threat of the high interest rates really bringing down companies and causing a major debt cycle isn't really materializing for an interesting reason, which is the spread. We call it the credit spread. So that's the premium that corporates have to pay in excess of what the government would have to pay. allows the corporate rates to actually be at a very decent level at the moment. 3 years ago, say a 10-year US corporate bond would have cost them about 6% yield. Mm-hmm. Now, even though yields and interest rates have gone up, it's only 6.5% because that spread has come in because people are not, the market and investors are not generally fearing an imminent recession anymore. And therefore, that premium that corporates have to pay has come down quite substantially. And that has taken further risks away that we will go into recession.
So do you think recession fears have fully gone away now?
They have gone away to a large extent, but they're not totally gone. Because even though we can see that inflation is going to come down further and probably touch that magical 2% sometime in April, May, there's still a chance that it rebounds somewhat. And central banks have already said, we're going to be really, really careful. We're not going to lower rates particularly early because we don't see a particular need for it because the economy is as solid as I described it early on. So there's not much of an incentive for them to go early to support a lagging, a struggling economy. And that, in the end, means that rates will stay higher for longer. And that could still cause some trouble for those companies that are, you know, having to refinance and were perhaps hoping not to refinance at 6.5, but at 4.5. And that's just not going to happen for a while. So it's the probabilities have really shrunk. So there is not, it's not definitely not the consensus opinion, but there's still a risk left that, you know, particularly in certain regions, it's going to go badly because as we saw in China, it's not everywhere that the markets have been particularly happy and upbeat. China has been a big loser over the last 12 months. And that is still possible if we get another increase in yields for the rest of the world, because that starts that whole revaluation carousel again between bonds and equity. So we're not totally out of the woods, but we can see the light through the trees, I think.
Do you think confidence is beginning to return somewhat, though, Lota, looking at sort of the Purchasing Managers Index, which assesses on the ground how manufacturing and services, and there's that 50-point sort of pivotal area, slightly above that, I think, in the US and the UK at the minute. Because the whole thing is the economy is driven on confidence, isn't it? Confidence for you to go out spending, myself, you know, the whole thing's driven. Do you think we're about to turn into that or not yet?
That was the really important takeaway from those last 2 months of last year, that pivot of the central banks where they said, we're not going to raise interest rates anymore. And as a result, then yields coming down really shifted the sentiment overall. And that trickled all the way down into businesses. And we saw it in those PMIs that you've mentioned there, the Purchasing Manager Indices that tell us about how businesses look forward. And while the services sector is definitely out of the sub 50 range and is actually ticking up quite nicely, the manufacturing is still a bit weak, probably on weak demand from China, but it's coming up so quickly and strongly that that's already quite a positive for the global economy. So sentiment is extremely important. And that is what's driving things upwards at the moment and is making analysts believe that the earnings, which we know are the underpinnings in the corporate world for where stock markets are valued apart from yields, that will be a positive this year. They will come in with positive growth. And so as long as the yield picture doesn't massively change, stays roughly where it is at the moment, which is likely, then, you know, any corporate profit growth should go straight to the bottom line and therefore straight into the valuations of equities.
It's good.
I was going to say, so because you mentioned a minute ago that obviously the US market had a great rally last year. How much of that was down to this sort of AI tech bonanza that's been going?
A lot. So that we have to you know, concede that, you know, it's not the whole US market that went up. If you take the top 10 stocks out of the S&P, which are almost all tech stocks, then the performance of the US market was no different to Europe or UK. So really, in particularly until the last 2 months of the year, when it spread a little bit into the smaller caps as well, it was very much a tech-driven market. But while that, it does remind us to a certain extent to what happened during the dot-com bubble 25 years ago, there are differences. These companies are making real profits. And there is real growth already. They are already very, very large. And, you know, sometimes there are periods when a lot of the growth just comes from a certain part of the economy. You know, if we go back a bit more than 100 years in the US, it was the big railway companies that drove the economy upwards and therefore were the big growth area. So even though we're looking at them with a little bit of trepidation because their valuations are fairly high and they're fairly big, it also, we have to admit, they are the ones that are growing the most worldwide, and they carry the things and have the things that we're keenest on. So their valuations are elevated, but they're nothing compared to what they were during the dot-com bubble when it really lost all sense and rationality.
Yeah, that said, Lota, you really have to diversify, don't you? Because you could think, oh, okay, let's pile on the bandwagon, let's buy all the tech stocks, and then potentially you could get your fingers burnt. And this is the whole point, isn't it, of having a sector diverse, global approach to investing and not try and chase sort of the latest fashion fad as it
absolutely means. And just the last 2 years we had some prime examples for that. So in 2022 we had a real negative year for the US tech. So it might have been really, really great last year, but 2022, you really lost money in US tech, whereas the UK market was the only market that actually made some gains. So you wanted to be diversified, whereas last year, all the gains seemed to come from tech and not so much from the UK, but in a diversified portfolio, you still made money overall.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Same with commodities, I suppose, from previous year as well.
Yes, commodities had a special year, obviously, because of the of
oil
the
prices.
War. Yeah, the oil prices and war. And that has been one of the surprises this year, that actually energy prices and commodity prices have come down quite a lot, even though the economy globally has held up quite well. And that was probably down to a large extent to that lagging of China. China has just not come out of the post-pandemic period in anywhere the same shape or form as we have there. Consumer and business sentiment is very depressed for various reasons, having to do with their government, but also with the deflating property bubble that they still have there. And as a result, they did not have the same level of demand for energy or commodities as they had before. And that's really taken the demand overhang out of the market. And thereby then, you know, demand supply needs to balance, has brought down prices.
So was cash king last year, Lota? Everybody was scrabbling around. We got some decent interest rates, thinking, well, I know what we'll do. We'll take money out of portfolios. We'll stick it in cash. We'll do much better. What did the year actually look like when you look back over that period?
Well, it was a humble king in the end, I would say. So, yes, it's not bad that we're able to get a return on our rainy day cash again, but there is one certainty, and that was reiterated last year: you will not beat inflation with cash. So, if you held cash in the highest yielding money market funds, which are very similar or even safer than a bank deposit account, you would have made about 4.6%. Mm-hmm. Because let's not forget, the interest rates weren't the whole year at 5.25%. In portfolios like we run them, the lowest return that we had at the end of the year was around 7% for the defensive portfolio, double digits for the higher equity content portfolios. So even within just a year, which is obviously a lot less than the prescribed 5-year minimum investment horizon, you did beat cash. And that's the experience, just the historic experience, that, you know, there is not much in terms of certainty, but there is a certainty that cash cannot beat inflation over the longer term. And it didn't even in the shorter term last year.
Yeah, of course, because that's why we invest ultimately, to strive to beat inflation, and you hope to beat cash deposit returns. So that's
exactly
the whole point of it, isn't it? And over the long term, stick with the mandate, it comes good. And we know that. But it can be quite a journey along the way, as we've seen.
Yes, my heart goes out to all those people who kind of gave up last year and put their money into banks and cash because they've now missed out. And that's unfortunately the one way to really not make money or lose money with long-term investing if you're just not sticking to your plan. And there is a reason why we in the industry say the minimum time horizon is 5 years.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, got to stick with it.
So to sort of wrap up, Lota, what's the outlook for this year then?
Yes. So we're definitely starting the year on a better footing for the economy. So the economic outlook looks a lot better. But unfortunately, as we know, markets front run. They look forward. And therefore, quite a bit of the good news that we're now hearing from economic data might have already been priced in last year. So our hope and expectation at the moment is that interest rates yields will not upset the markets again. So that's all stabilizing to a certain extent. And then if earnings are growing, as we discussed early on, that adds to the bottom line into the basis of equities, and they can therefore then go up. But with bond yields having been quite volatile in the tail end of last year and having started on a bit of a volatile footing again this year, I think we can't expect it to be a straight path. It's going to be, particularly in the first half of the year, will continue to be a bit bumpy as the market participants are still sort of nervous and wondering how the high yields will play out in the corporate sector. But over the course of the year, if we get to single digit, mid digit positive returns, I'll be quite happy, and I think that will really build the case for further gains in years down the line.
What about the elections, Lota? Two elections, US, UK. Is that going to have an impact on portfolios?
Three elections, India.
India. Yeah.
Well, history shows that politics has got surprisingly little impact on capital market returns. If you remember, When Trump came to power, initially there was a wobble, but overall, actually, markets were quite positive over his rather chaotic administration time. So even if he was to come back for another 4 years, markets seem to be relatively sanguine about it. The one thing that we would have to watch, though, is that, as I might have, I think it probably came across earlier that the US is the growth engine of the world at the moment. China's not doing that job. Europe is not doing that job. And if Trump decides that he wants to become more restrictive and introduce, as he has alluded to, a 10% tariff on anything that comes into the US,
then
that protectionism could indeed scupper things a little bit and be a negative over the medium term for the global economy, because if we're not doing trade with each other anymore, that just does drive down the effectiveness of our combined economies. So that's one to be watched, but not one that one is particularly worried about. The election in the UK, yes, I know a lot of people are thinking, oh my God, if Labour comes in, taxes go up, fiscal expenditure will go out. Well, I think they're doing everything they can at the moment to work against that impression. And when you look at the fundamentals, there is not much room for Labour to increase the tax burden any higher than it is already.
Already quite high, isn't it?
And they've already scaled back on any promises what they would spend on turning our economy more CO2 positive. Although we have to differentiate here between investment and spending. They are two different things, as we know from our own households as well, that if you actually have a good case to invest into the longer term for something that then pays back to society, then actually that can still be taken quite positively by the markets. Whereas if, like Liz Truss, you just want to borrow in order to lower taxes, then that doesn't tend to be taken quite as positively.
Okay. Some positives there.
Yeah, definitely some
thank
positives
you.
There.
I think we'll wrap up there. Thank you, Lota. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to interview you. And thank you for your insights. We look forward to revisiting this later on in the year and see where we're at, see what transpires, see if any of the items we've talked about transpire. And I'm sure that there'll be something that comes from left field, as there
always
is. There always is. It we need to deal with and navigate through. But until then, until we have the next recording, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lota. Take care.